Imagine a scenario where the government just, I don't know, has the legal authority to walk right into your home, overrule your parental rights, and physically take your child.
Yeah, it's an incredibly heavy thought.
Right. But that extreme power is the beating heart of today's deep dive into our sources on South Africa's Child Care Act 74 of 1983.
And our mission today is to really dissect the invisible scaffolding that protects society's most vulnerable.
Exactly. We're looking at the raw friction between heavy-handed state intervention and, well, fundamental biological rights. Okay, let's unpack this.
Well, the central tension here is defining exactly when the state is justified in detonating the family structure for the sake of a child's survival. The legislation establishes a strict threshold for what constitutes a child in need of care under Section 14.
And it requires far more than just imperfect parenting, doesn't it?
No, absolutely. The child must face terminal threats. We're talking abandonment, physical trauma, or, you know, commercial sexual exploitation.
I see it almost like medical triage. The state can't legally operate just because a family has a metaphorical cold.
Right, exactly.
There needs to be a life-threatening hemorrhage. But what I find really striking is how the law handles the delay of bureaucracy. Like, if a social worker has to wait for a magistrate to sign a warrant, that administrative delay could literally cost a child their life.
What's fascinating here is how the legislation explicitly solves that. Under Section 12, it legally empowers a police officer or a social worker to remove a child to a place of safety without a warrant if immediate danger is present.
Wait, really? So no warrant needed at all?
None. The law consciously prioritizes physical survival over immediate due process. They secure the child first and then retroactively justify the action to the courts later.
They break the door down first and file the paperwork second.
Exactly.
But once that immediate extraction happens, the focus pivots to permanent placement. Here's where it gets really interesting. I was looking at the adoption protocols, and the law mandates a rigid 60-day window for a parent to withdraw their consent to an adoption under Section 18.
Yeah, it functions kind of like a contractual escrow. You don't just sign a child away. Yeah. The state forces a psychological cooling off period to prevent impulsive surrenders.
Right, but I have to push back on the limits of consent here. Surely we don't ask an abuser for permission to adopt out their victim.
Oh, we don't. Section 19 completely bypasses parental consent in extreme circumstances.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if the parent is guilty of severe abuse, or, say, if the child was conceived through an incestuous relationship, the legal system entirely severs their right to block an adoption.
So the biological tie is just legally nullified.
Right, because biology cannot be used as a hostage tactic against the child's future.
So what does this all mean for the spaces outside the home? Because protection obviously has to extend into the broader community and the economy, right?
Definitely. Like in Section 52A, the Act strictly prohibits employing children under 15.
But it includes a backdoor, allowing the minister to grant targeted exemptions. To me, a backdoor just sounds like a convenient loophole for child labor. I mean, why even have a ban if you're going to write in an exception?
Well, because a blanket zero-tolerance policy actually harms unique cases. That exemption isn't for sweatshops. It exists to legally permit specific controlled scenarios.
Like child actors on a film set.
Exactly. Or highly regulated vocational apprenticeships where a total ban would actually hinder the child's development. It's basically a pressure valve for reality. And if we connect them to the bigger picture under Section 42, the state also deputizes the community to enforce these protections.
Right, where dentists, doctors, and teachers carry a mandatory legal duty to report suspected abuse or nutritional deficiency.
Yes, exactly.
Deputizing dentists is a detail that really caught my eye. It's incredibly specific, but structurally brilliant. A dentist looking in a child's mouth is often the very first person to spot the hidden physical signs of abuse.
Yeah, like bruising on the soft palate.
Right, or severe malnourishment degrading the enamel. The law forces them to be the state's eyes where a social worker simply cannot see. This entire blueprint proves that the law isn't just dry legalese. It actively, and sometimes harshly, engineers the reality of childhood for you and everyone around you.
It really attempts to impose rigorous order on the absolute messiest parts of human existence. This raises an important question, particularly when we look at Section 54, which handles a child whose age is completely undocumented.
Oh, the age estimation clause.
Yeah. If a child's age is entirely unknown during court proceedings, a presiding officer is legally permitted to simply look at the child and guess their age based purely on appearance.
Wait, just guess based on how they look?
Just a guess. And whatever age that official estimates, well, that legally becomes that person's true objective age on paper.
Which leaves you with something wild to think about. We treat the justice system as this machinery of exact empirical science. But how does it feel knowing that this same system, capable of terminating parental rights and reshaping families, can fundamentally define a person's objective reality based on nothing more than a visual vibe check?